some way that was permanent. What for? It's idiotic. It would make me feel better, I think. Then you do it, he said sharply. I've already buried one son. I won't bury another. Now, if you don't mind, I'm trying to listen. He turned up the volume again, leaned his head back, and closed his eyes. One sunny morning that week, Mariam picked a spot in the yard and dug a hole. In the name of Allah, and with Allah, and in the name of the Messenger of Allah, upon whom be the blessings and peace of Allah, she said under her breath, at the row of windswept palm trees. The wind makes her eyes water and buries their shoes in sand, hurls knots of dead grass from the curved ridges of one dune to another. They're watching sailboats bob in the distance. Around them, seagulls squawk and shiver in the wind. The wind whips up another spray of sand off the shallow windward slopes. There's a noise then like a chant, and she tells him something Bobby had taught her years before about singing sand. He rubs at her eyebrow, wipes grains of sand from it. She catches a flicker.
Important. When our vows are spoken, we will lie together, as man and wife. Not until then.
I understand. Thanks for telling me about Tika, Karaman said. He patted Gold Moon awkwardly on the shoulder and returned to his post. The night passed quietly, with no sign of their pursuer. When the watches changed, Tanis discussed Eben's story with Gilfinas and received an unsatisfactory answer. Yes. What the man said was true. Gilfinas had been gone when the Draconians attacked. He had been trying to convince the druids to help. He'd returned when he heard the sounds of battle, and that's when he'd been struck on the head. He told Tanis all this in a low, bitter voice. The companions woke when morning's pale light crept through the door. After a quick breakfast, they gathered their things and walked down the corridor into the Sla Mori. Arriving at the crossroads, they examined both directions, left and right. Riverwind knelt to study the tracks, then rose, his expression puzzled. They are human, he said. But they are not human. There are animal tracks as well, probably rats. The dwarf was right. I see no sign of Draconians or goblins. What is odd, however, is that the animal tracks end right here where the paths cross. They do not go into the right-hand corridor. The other strange tracks do not go to the left. Well, which way do we go? Tanis asked.
I say we don't go either way, Eben stated. The entrance is still open. Let's turn back.
Turning back is no longer an option, Tanis said coldly. I would give you leave to go yourself, only you don't trust me, Eben finished. I don't blame you, Tanis Half-Elven. All right, I said I'd help and I meant it. Which way, left or right?
The evil comes from the right,
Raistlin whispered. Gilfinas, Tanis asked. Do you have any idea where we are?
No, Tantalus, the elf answered.
Legend says that there were many entrances from Sla Mori into Pax Tharkas. All secret. Only the elven priests were allowed down here, to honor the dead. One way is as good as another.
Or as bad,
whispered Tasselhoff to Tika. She gulped and crept over to stand near Karaman. We go left, Tanis said, since Raistlin feels uneasy about the right. Walking by the light of the mage's staff, the companions followed the dusty, rock-strewn tunnel for several hundred feet, then reached an ancient stone wall rent by a huge hole through which only darkness was visible. Raistlin's small light showed faintly the distant walls of a great hall. The warriors entered first, flanking the mage, who held his staff high. The gigantic hall must once have been splendid, but now it had fallen into such decay that its faded splendor seemed pathetic and horrible. Two rows of seven columns ran the length of the hall, though some lay shattered on the floor. Part of the far wall was caved in, evidence of the destructive force of the cataclysm. At the very back of the room stood two double bronze doors. As Raistlin advanced, the others spread out, swords drawn. Suddenly, Caramon, in the front of the hall, gave a strangled cry. The mage hurried to shine his light where Caramon pointed with a trembling hand. Before them was a massive throne, ornately carved of granite. Two huge marble statues flanked the throne, their sightless eyes staring forward into the darkness. The throne they guarded was not empty. Upon it sat the skeletal remains of what had once been a male. Of what race, none could say, death being the great equalizer. The figure was dressed in regal robes that, even though faded and decayed, still gave evidence of their richness. A cloak covered the gaunt shoulders, a crown gleamed on the fleshless skull. The bone hands, fingers laying gracefully in death, rested on a sheathed sword. Gilthanas fell to his knees. "Kith Kanan," he said in a whisper. "We stand in the Hall of the Ancients, his burial tomb. None have seen this sight since the elven clerics vanished in the cataclysm." Tanis stared at the throne until, slowly, overcome by feelings he did not understand, the half-elf sank to his knees. "Felin Thalos, Imorquanethi, Saikith Kananoth, Mortari Larion," he murmured in tribute to the greatest of the elven kings.
"What a beautiful sword," Tasselhoff said, his shrill voice breaking the reverent silence. Tanis glared at him sternly. "I'm not going to take it," the Kender protested, looking wounded. "I just mentioned it as an item of interest."
Tanis rose to his feet. "Don't touch it," he said sternly to the Kender, then went to explore other parts of the room. As Tas walked closer to examine the sword, Raistlin went with him. The mage began to murmur.
"Tsaran Goralath, Ith Hakon."
He moved his thin hand swiftly above the sword in a prescribed pattern. The sword began to give off a faint red glow. Raistlin smiled and said softly,
"It is enchanted."
Tas gasped.
"Good enchantment or bad?"
"I have no way of knowing,"
the mage whispered.
"But since it has lain undisturbed for so long, I certainly would not venture to touch it."
He turned away, leaving Tas to wonder if he dared disobey Tanis and risk being turned into something icky. While the Kender was wrestling with temptation, the rest searched the walls for secret entrances. Flint helped by giving them learned and lengthy descriptions of dwarven-built, hidden doorways. Gilthanas walked to the far end of Kith Kanan's throne, where the two huge bronze double doors stood. One bearing a relief map of Pax Tharkas was slightly ajar. Calling for light, he and Raistlin studied the map. Caramon gave the skeletal figure of the long-dead king a final backward glance and joined Sturm and Flint in searching the walls for secret doors. Finally, Flint called,
"Tasselhoff, you worthless Kender, this is your specialty. At least you're always bragging about how you found the door that had been lost for 100 years which led to the great jewel of something or other."
"It was in a place like this, too,"
Tas said, his interest in the sword forgotten. Skipping over to help, he came to a sudden stop.
"What's that?"
he asked, cocking his head.
What's what?
Flint said absently, slapping the walls.
A scraping sound,
the Kender said, puzzled.
It's coming from those doors.
Tanis looked up, having learned long ago to respect Tasselhoff's hearing. He walked toward the doors where Gilthanas and Raistlin were intent upon the map. Suddenly, Raistlin took a step backward. Foul-smelling air wafted into the room through the open door. Now everyone could hear the scraping sound and a soft, squishing noise.
Shut the door!
Raistlin whispered urgently.
Caraman! Tanis cried. Sturm!
The two were already running for the door along with Eben. All of them leaned against it, but they were flung backward as the bronze doors flew open, banging against the walls with a hollow, booming sound. A monster slithered into the hall.
Help us, Mishikal!
Goldmoon breathed the goddess's name as she sank back against the wall. The thing entered the room swiftly, despite its great bulk. The scraping sound they had heard was caused by its gigantic, bloated body sliding along the floor.
A slug!
Tass said, running up to examine it with interest.
But look at the size of that thing! How do you suppose it got so big? I wonder what it eats.
Us, you ninny!
Flint shouted, grabbing the Kender and flinging him to the ground just as the huge slug spat out a stream of saliva. Its eyes, perched atop, slender, rotating stalks on top of its head, were not of much use, nor did it need them. The slug could find and devour rats in the darkness by sense of smell alone. Now it detected much larger prey, and it shot its paralyzing saliva in the general direction of the living flesh it craved. The deadly liquid missed as the Kender and the dwarf rolled out of the way. Sturm and Caraman charged in, slashing at the monster with their swords. Caraman's sword didn't even penetrate the thick, rubbery hide. Sturm's two-handed blade bit, causing the slug to rear back in pain. Tanis charged forward as the slug's head swiveled toward the knight.
Tantalus!
The scream pierced Tanis's concentration and he halted, turning back to stare in amazement at the entrance to the hall.
Lorana!
At that moment, the slug, sensing the half-elf, spat the corrosive liquid at him. The saliva struck his sword, causing the metal to fizz and smoke, then dissolve in his hand. The burning liquid ran down his arm, searing his flesh. Tanis, screaming in agony, fell to his knees.
Tantalus!
Lorana cried again, running to him.
Stop her!
Tanis gasped, doubled over in pain, clutching a hand and sword arm suddenly blackened and useless. The slug, sensing success, slithered forward, dragging its pulsating gray body through the door. Goldmoon cast a fearful glance at the huge monster, then ran to Tanis. Riverwind stood over them protectively.
Get away!
Tanis said through clenched teeth. Goldmoon grasped his injured hand in her own, praying to the goddess. Riverwind fit an arrow to his bow and shot at the slug. The arrow struck the creature in the neck, doing little damage, but distracting its attention from Tanis. The half-elf saw Goldmoon's hand touch his, but he could feel nothing but pain. Then the pain eased and feeling returned to his hand. Smiling at Goldmoon, he marveled at her healing powers, even as he lifted his head to see what was happening. The others were attacking the creature with renewed fury, attempting to distract it from Tanis, but they might as well have been plunging their weapons into a thick, rubbery wall. Tanis rose to his feet, shakily. His hand was healed, but his sword lay on the ground, a molten lump of metal. Weaponless except for his longbow, he fell back, pulling Goldmoon with him as the slug slid into the room. Raistlin ran to Fizban's side.
Now is the time for the casting of the fireball, old one,
he panted.
It is?
Fizban's face filled with delight.
Wonderful! How does it go?
Don't you remember?
Raistlin practically shrieked, dragging the mage behind a pillar as the slug spat another glob of burning saliva onto the floor.
I used to. Let me see.
Fizban's brow furrowed in concentration.
Can't you do it? I have not gained the power yet, old one. That spell is still beyond my strength.
Raistlin closed his eyes and began to concentrate on those spells he did know.
Fall back! Get out of here!
Tanis shouted, shielding Lorana and Gold Moon as best he could while he fumbled for his longbow and his arrows.
It'll just come after us,
Sturm yelled, thrusting his blade home once again. But all he and Karaman accomplished was to enrage the monster further. Suddenly, Raistlin held up his hands.
Kalith Karan, Tobanis Kar,
he cried, and flaming darts sprang from his fingers, striking the creature in the head. The slug reared in silent agony and shook its head, but returned to the hunt. Suddenly it lunged straight forward, sensing victims at the end of the room where Tanis sought to protect Gold Moon and Lorana. Maddened by pain, driven wild by the smell of blood, the slug attacked with unbelievable speed. Tanis's arrow bounced off the leathery hide and the monster dove for him, its mouth gaping open. The half-elf dropped the useless bow and staggered backward, nearly stumbling over the steps leading to the throne of Kith Cannon.
"Behind the throne!"
he yelled, preparing to hold the monster's attention while Gold Moon and Lorana ran for cover. His hand reached out, grabbing for a huge rock, anything to hurl at the creature, when his fingers closed over the metal hilt of a sword. Tanis nearly dropped the weapon in amazement. The metal was so cold it burned his hand. The blade gleamed brightly in the wavering light of the mage's staff. There wasn't time to question, however. Tanis drove the point into the slug's gaping maw just as the creature swooped in for the kill.
Run!
Tanis yelled. Grasping Lorana's hand, he dragged her toward the hole. Pushing her through, he turned around, preparing to help keep the slug at bay while the others escaped, but the slug's appetite had died. Writhing in misery, it slowly turned and slithered back toward its lair. Clear, sticky liquid dribbled from its wounds. The companions crowded into the tunnel, stopping for a moment to calm their hearts and breathe deeply. Raistlin, wheezing, leaned on his brother. Tanis glanced around.
"Where's Tasselhoff?"
he asked in frustration, whirling around to go back into the hall. He nearly fell over the kender.
"I brought you the scabbard," Tass said, holding it up. "For the sword."
"Back down the tunnel,"
Tanis said firmly, stopping everyone's questions. Reaching the crossroads and sinking down on the dusty floor to rest, Tanis turned to the elf maid.
"What in the name of the abyss are you doing here, Lorana? Has something happened in Qualinost?"
"Nothing happened,"
Lorana said, shaking from the encounter with the slug.
I just came."
"Then you're going right back,"
Gilthanas yelled angrily, grabbing Lorana. She broke away from his grasp.
"I'm not either going back," she said petulantly. "I'm coming with you and Tanis and the rest."
"Lorana, this is madness,"
Tanis snapped.
"We're not going on an outing. This isn't a game. You saw what happened in there. We were nearly killed."
"I know, Tantalus,"
Lorana said pleadingly. Her voice quivered and broke.
"You told me that there comes a time when you've got to risk your life for something you believe in. I'm the one who followed you."
"You could have been killed,"
Gilthanas began.
"But I wasn't,"
Lorana cried defiantly.
"I have been trained as a warrior. All elven women are, in memory of the time when we fought beside our men to save our homeland."
"It's not serious training,"
Tanis began angrily.
I followed you, didn't I?
Lorana demanded, casting a glance at Sturm.
Skillfully?
She asked the knight.
Yes,
he admitted. Still, that doesn't mean... Raistlin interrupted him.
We are losing time,
the mage whispered, and I, for one, do not want to spend any longer than I must in this dank and musty tunnel. He was wheezing, barely able to breathe.
The girl has made her decision. We can spare no one to return with her, nor do we dare trust her to leave on her own. She might be captured and reveal our plans. We must take her.
Tanis glared at the mage, hating him for his cold, unfeeling logic. And for being right. The half-elf stood up, yanking Lorana to her feet. He came very close to hating her, too, without quite understanding why, knowing simply that she was making a difficult task much harder.
You are on your own,
he told her quietly, as the rest stood up and gathered their things.
I can't hang around protecting you. Neither can Gilfinas. You have behaved like a spoiled brat. I told you once before you'd better grow up. Now, if you don't, you're going to die, and probably get all the rest of us killed right along with you.
I'm sorry, Tantalus,
Lorana said, avoiding his angry gaze.
But I couldn't lose you. Not again. I love you.
Her lips tightened, and she said softly,
I'll make you proud of me.
Tanis turned and walked away, catching sight of Caraman's grinning face and hearing Tika giggle. He flushed. Ignoring them, he approached Sturm and Gilthinas.
It seems we must take the right-hand corridor after all, whether or not Raistlin's feelings about evil are correct.
He buckled on his new sword belt and scabbard, noticing, as he did so, Raistlin's eyes lingering on the weapon.
What is it now?
He asked irritably.
The sword is enchanted,
Raistlin said softly, coughing.
How did you get it?
Tanis started. He stared at the blade, moving his hand as though it might turn into a snake. He frowned, trying to remember.
I was near the body of the Elven King, searching for something to throw at the slug, when suddenly the sword was in my hand. It had been taken out of the sheath, and...
Tanis paused, swallowing.
Yes,
Raistlin pursued, his eyes glittering eagerly.
He gave it to me,
Tanis said softly.
I remember his hand touched mine. He pulled it from its sheath.
Who? Asked Gilthinus. None of us were near there.
Kith Cannon.
Chapter 10. The Royal Guard. The Chain Room. Perhaps it was just imagination, but the darkness seemed thicker as they walked down the other tunnel, and the air grew colder. No one needed the dwarf to tell them that this was not normal in a cave, where the temperature supposedly stayed constant. They reached a branch in the tunnel, but no one felt inclined to go left, which might lead them back to the Hall of the Ancients and the wounded slug.
The elf almost got us killed by the slug,
Eben said accusingly. I wonder what's in store for us down here. No one answered. By now, everyone was experiencing the sense of growing evil Raistlin had warned of. Their footsteps slowed, and it was only through force of group will that they continued on.
Lorana felt fear convulse her limbs, and she clung to the wall for support. She longed for Tanis to comfort her and protect her, as he had done when they were younger and facing imaginary foes. But he walked at the head of the line with her brother. Each had his own fear to contend with. At the moment, Lorana decided that she would die before she asked for their help. It occurred to her then that she was really serious when she said she wanted to make Tanis proud of her. Shoving herself away from the side of the crumbling tunnel, she gritted her teeth and moved forward. The tunnel came to an abrupt end. Crumbled stone and rubble lay beneath a hole in the rock wall. The sense of malevolent evil flowing from the darkness beyond the hole could almost be felt, wafting across the flesh like the touch of unseen fingers. The companions stopped, none of them, not even the nerveless Kender, daring to enter.
"It's not that I'm afraid," Tass confided in a whisper to Flint. "It's just that I'd rather be somewhere else."
The silence became oppressive. Each could hear his own heartbeat and the breathing of the others. The light jittered and wavered in the mage's shaking hand.
"Well, we can't stay here forever," Eben said hoarsely. "Let the elf go in. He's the one who brought us here."
"I'll go," Gylfanas answered, "but I'll need light."
"None may touch the staff but I,"
Raistlin hissed. He paused, then added reluctantly,
"I'll go with you."
"Raist," Caramon began, but his brother stared at him coldly.
"I'll go too,"
the big man muttered. "No," Tanis said. "You stay here and guard the others. Gylfanas, Raistlin, and I will go." Gylfanas entered the hole in the wall, followed by the mage and Tanis, the half-elf assisting Raistlin. The light revealed a narrow chamber, vanishing into darkness beyond the staff's reach. On either side were rows of large stone doors, each held in place by huge iron hinges, spiked directly into the rock wall. Raistlin held the staff high, shining it down the shadowy chamber. Each knew that the evil was centered here.
"We're going to need a big taxi." Lila looked up. It was Mami calling down from her bedroom upstairs. She was leaning out the window, called himself Amiro Muminin, leader of the faithful. "It's true that these boys have no risha, no roots," Rashid said, addressing neither Mariam nor Laila. Ever since the failed escape 2.5 years ago, Mariam knew that she and Laila had become one and the same being to him, equally wretched, equally deserving of his distrust, his disdain, and disregard. When he spoke, Mariam had the sense that he was having a conversation with himself, or with some invisible presence in the room who, unlike her and Laila, was worthy of his opinions. "They may have no past," he said, smoking and looking up at "I need to speak to your parents, Dohtarjan," he said when Laila opened the door. He was a stocky man with a sharp, weather-roughened face. He wore a potato-colored coat and a brown wool parkol on his head. "Can I tell them who's here?" Then Bobby's hand was on Lila's shoulder and he gently pulled her from the door. "Why don't you go upstairs, Laila? Go on." As she moved toward the steps, Laila heard the visitor say to Bobby that he had news from Pancher. Mami was in the room now too. She had one hand clamped over her mouth and her eyes were skipping from Bobby to the man in the pakol. Laila down, and then if a night breeze blew, it did so timidly, as if to atone for the excesses of its daytime sibling. On Mariam's last day at Velayat, Nagma gave her a tangerine. She put it in Mariam's palm and closed her fingers around it. Then she burst into tears. "You're the best friend I ever had," she said. Mariam spent the rest of the day
Even a gully dwarf knows that.
So we're at a dead end, Eben said grimly.
Stand back,
Raistlin whispered. Carefully leaning his staff against the wall, he placed both hands on the door, touching it only with the tips of his fingers, then said,
Ketzaram Bakliol.
There was a flare of orange light, but not from the door. It came from the wall.
Move!
Raistlin grabbed his brother and jerked him back, just as the entire wall, bronze door and all, began to pivot.
Quickly, before it shuts,
Tanis said, and everyone hurried through the door, Caramon catching his brother as Raistlin staggered.
Are you all right?
Caramon asked as the wall slammed shut behind them.
Yes, the weakness will pass,
Raistlin whispered.
That is the first spell I have cast from the spellbook of Fist and Antalus. The spell of opening worked, but I did not believe it would drain me like this.
The door led them into another passageway that ran straight west for about 40 feet, took a sharp turn to the south, then east, then continued south again. Here, the way was blocked by another single bronze door. Raistlin shook his head.
I can only use the spell once. It is gone from my memory.
A fireball would open the door, said Fizban. I think I remember that spell now. No, old one,
Tanis said hastily. It would fry all of us in this narrow passage.
Tas.
Reaching the door, the Kender pushed on it.
Drat! It's open,
he said, disappointed not to have to pick a lock. He peered inside.
Just another room.
They entered cautiously. Raistlin illuminating the chamber with the staff's light. The room was perfectly round, about 100 feet in diameter. Directly across from them, to the south, stood a bronze door, and in the center of the room,
a crooked column,
Tas said, giggling.
Look, Flint, the dwarves built a crooked column.
If they did, they had a good reason,
the dwarf snapped, shoving the Kender aside to examine the tall, thin column. It definitely slanted.
Hmm,
said Flint, puzzled. Then,
it isn't a column at all, you doorknob,
Flint exploded.
It's a great huge chain. Look, you can see here it's hooked to an iron bracket on the floor.
Then, we are in the chain room, Gilthanas said in excitement. This is the famed defense mechanism of Pax Tharkas. We must be almost in the fortress.
The companions gathered around, staring at the monstrous chain in wonder. Each link was as long as Caramon was tall, and as thick around as the trunk of an oak.
What does the mechanism do?
Asked Tasselhoff, longing to climb up the great chain.
Where does this lead?
The chain leads to the mechanism itself, Gilthanas answered.
As to how it works, you must ask the dwarf, for I am unfamiliar with engineering. But if this chain is released from its moorings, he pointed to the iron bracket in the floor, massive blocks of granite drop down behind the gates of the fortress. Then no force on Kryn can open them. Leaving the Kender to peer up into the shadowy darkness, trying in vain to get a glimpse of the wondrous mechanism, Gilthanas joined the others in searching the room.
Look at this,
he finally cried, pointing to a faint door-shaped line in the stones on the north wall.
A secret door! This must be the entrance!
There's a catch!
Tasselhoff, turning from the chain, pointed to a chipped piece of stone at the bottom.
The dwarves slipped up,
he said, grinning at Flint.
This is a false door that looks false.
And therefore not to be trusted,
Flint said flatly.
Bah!
Dwarves have bad days like everyone else, Eben said, bending down to try the catch.
"Don't open it,"
Raceland said suddenly. "Why not?" asked Sturm. "Because you want to alert someone before we find the way into Pax Tharkas?"
"If I had wanted to betray you, knight, I could have done so 1,000 times before this,"
Raceland hissed, staring at the secret door.
"I sense a power behind that door, greater than any I have felt since."
He stopped, shuddering.
"Since when?"
his brother prompted gently.
"The towers of high sorcery,"
Raceland whispered.
"I warn you, do not open that door."
"See where the south door leads," Tanis told the dwarf. Flint stumped over to the bronze door on the south wall and shoved it open.
"Near as I can tell, it leads down another passage exactly like all the others,"
he reported glumly.
"The way to Pax Tharkas is through a secret door,"
Gilthanas repeated. Before anyone could stop him, he reached down and pulled out the chipped stone. The door shivered and began to swing silently inward.
"You will regret this,"
Raceland choked. The door slid aside to reveal a large room nearly filled with yellow, brick-like objects. Through a thick layer of dust, a faint yellowish color was visible.
"A treasure room!" Eben cried. "We found the treasure of Kith Cannon!"
"All in gold," Sturm said coldly. "Worthless these days, since steel's the only thing of any value."
His voice trailed off. His eyes widened in horror.
"What is it?"
shouted Caramon, drawing his sword.
"I don't know,"
Sturm said, more as a gasp than words.
"I do."
Raceland breathed as the thing took shape before his eyes.
"It is the spirit of a dark elf. I warned you not to open that door."
"Do something,"
Eben said, stumbling backward.
"Put up your weapons, fools,"
Raceland said in a piercing whisper.
"You cannot fight her. Her touch is death. And if she wails while we are within these walls, we are doomed. Her keening voice alone kills. Run, run, all of you, quickly, through the south door!"
Even as they fell back, the darkness in the treasure room took shape, coalescing into the coldly beautiful, distorted features of a female drow. An evil elf of ages past, whose punishment for crimes unspeakable had been execution.
Then the powerful elven magic users chained her spirit, forcing her to guard forever the king's treasure. At the sight of these living beings, she stretched out her hands, craving the warmth of flesh, and opened her mouth to scream out her grief and her hatred of all living things.
The companions turned and fled, stumbling over each other in their haste to escape through the bronze door. Caramon fell over his brother, knocking the staff from Raceland's hand. The staff clattered on the floor, its light still glowing. For only dragonfire can destroy the magic crystal, but now its light flared out over the floor, plunging the rest of the room into darkness. Seeing her prey escape, the spirit flitted into the chain room, her grasping hand brushing Eben's cheek. He screamed at the chilling, burning touch and collapsed. Sturm caught him and dragged him through the door just as Raceland grabbed his staff, and he and Caramon lunged through.
"Is that everyone?"
Tanis asked, reluctant to close the door. Then he heard a low, moaning sound, so frightful that he felt his heart stop beating for a moment. Fear seized him. He couldn't breathe. The cry ceased, and his heart gave a great, painful leap. The spirit sucked in its breath to scream again.
"No time to look,"
Raceland gasped. "Shut the door, brother!" Caramon threw all his weight on the bronze door. It slammed shut with a boom that echoed through the hall.
"That won't stop her,"
Eben cried, panic-stricken.
"No," said Raceland softly. "Her magic is powerful, more powerful than mine. I can cast a spell on the door, but it will weaken me greatly. I suggest you run while you can. If it fails, perhaps I can stall her."
"Riverwind, take the others on ahead," Tanis ordered. "Sturm and I'll stay with Raceland and Caramon." The others crept down the dark corridor, looking back to watch in horrible fascination. Raceland ignored them and handed the staff to his brother. The light from the glowing crystal flashed out at the unfamiliar touch. The mage put his hands on the door, pressing both palms flat against it. Closing his eyes, he forced himself to forget everything, except the magic.
"Kallis An Budrunin."
His concentration broke as he felt a terrible chill. The dark elf. She had recognized his spell and was trying to break him.
Images of his battle with another dark elf in the Towers of High Sorcery came back to his mind. He struggled to blot out the evil memory of the battle that wrecked his body and came close to destroying his mind, but he felt himself losing control. He had forgotten the words. The door trembled. The elf was coming through. Then, from somewhere inside the mage came a strength he had discovered within himself only twice before. In the tower, and on the altar of the Black Dragon in Zakhtzoroth. The familiar voice that he could hear clearly in his mind yet never identify spoke to him, repeating the words of the spell.
Raceland shouted them aloud in a strong, clear voice that was not his own. "Kallis An Budrunin, Kara Emarath!"
From the other side of the door came a wail of disappointment, failure. The door held. The mage collapsed. Caramon handed the staff to Eben as he picked up his brother in his arms and followed the others as they groped their way along the dark passage. Another secret door opened easily to Flint's hand, leading to a series of short, debris-filled tunnels. Trembling with fear, the companions wearily made their way past these obstacles. Finally, they emerged into a large, open room filled from ceiling to floor with stacks of wooden crates. Riverwind lit a torch on the wall. The crates were nailed shut. Some bore the label Solace. Some, Gateway.
"This is it. We're inside the fortress," Gilthanas said, grimly victorious. "We stand in the cellar of Pax Tharkas."
"Thank the true gods." Tanis sighed and sank onto the floor, the others slumping down beside him. It was then they noticed that Fizban and Tasselhoff were missing. Chapter 11. Lost. The Plan.
Betrayed.
Tasselhoff could never, afterward, clearly recall those last few panicked moments in the chain room. He remembered saying,
"A dark elf? Where?"
and standing on his tiptoes, trying desperately to see, when suddenly the glowing staff fell on the floor. He heard Tanis shouting and, above that, a kind of moaning sound that made the Kender lose all sense of where he was or what he was doing. Then strong hands grabbed him around the waist, lifting him up into the air.
"Climb!"
shouted a voice beneath him. Tasselhoff stretched out his hands, felt the cool metal of the chain, and began to climb. He heard a door boom far below, and the chilling wail of the dark elf again. It didn't sound deadly this time, more like a cry of rage and anger. Tas hoped this meant his friends had escaped.
"I wonder how I'll find them again," he asked himself softly,
feeling discouraged for a moment. Then he heard Fizban muttering to himself and cheered up. He wasn't alone. Thick, heavy darkness wrapped around the Kender. Climbing by feel alone, he was growing extremely tired when he felt cool air brush his right cheek. He sensed, rather than saw, that he must be coming to the place where the chain and the mechanism linked up. Tas was rather proud of that pun. If only he could see! Then he remembered. He was, after all, with a magician.
"We could use a light,"
Tas called out.
"A fight? Where?"
Fizban nearly lost his grip on the chain.
"Not fight, light,"
Tas said patiently, clinging to a link.
"I think we're near the top of this thing, and we really ought to have a look around."
"Oh, certainly. Let's see. Light."
He heard the magician fumbling in his pouches. Apparently he found what he was searching for, because he soon gave a little crow of triumph, spoke a few words, and a small puffball of bluish-yellow flame appeared, hovering near the magician's hat. The glowing puffball whizzed up, danced around Tasselhoff as if to inspect the Kender, then returned to the proud magician. Tas was enchanted. He had all sorts of questions regarding the wonderful flaming puffball, but his arms were getting shaky and the old magician was nearly done in. He knew they had better find some way to get off this chain. Looking up, he saw that they were, as he had guessed, at the top part of the fortress. The chain ran up over a huge wooden cogwheel mounted on an iron axle anchored in solid stone. The links of the chain fit over teeth big as tree trunks. Then the chain stretched out across the wide shaft, disappearing into a tunnel to the Kender's right.
"We can climb onto that gear and crawl along the chain into the tunnel,"
the Kender said, pointing.
"Can you send the light up here?"
"Light to the wheel,"
Fizban instructed. The light wavered in the air for a moment, then danced back and forth, in a decidedly naysaying manner. Fizban frowned.
"Light to the wheel,"
he repeated firmly. The puffball flame darted around to hide behind the magician's hat. Fizban, making a wild grab for it, nearly fell, and flung both arms around the chain. The puffball light danced in the air behind him as if enjoying the game.
I guess we've got enough light after all," Tas said.
"No discipline in the younger generation,"
Fizban grumbled.
"His father, now there was a puffball."
The old magician's voice died away as he began to climb again, the puffball flame hovering near the tip of his battered hat. Tas soon reached the first tooth on the wheel. Discovering the teeth were rough-hewn and easy to climb, Tas crawled from one to another until he reached the top. Fizban, his robes hiked up around his thighs, followed with amazing agility.
"Could you ask the light to shine in the tunnel?" Tas asked.
"Light to the tunnel,"
Fizban ordered, his bony legs wrapped around a link in the chain. The puffball appeared to consider the command. Slowly, it skittered to the edge of the tunnel, and then stopped.
"Inside the tunnel,"
the magician commanded. The puffball flame refused.
"I think it's afraid of the dark,"
Fizban said apologetically.
"My goodness, how remarkable,"
the Kender said in astonishment.
"Well,"
he thought for a moment,
"if it will stay where it is, I think I can see enough to make my way across the chain. It looks like it's only about 15 feet or so to the tunnel."
With nothing below but several hundred feet of darkness and air, never mind the stone floor at the bottom, Tas thought.
"Someone should come up here and grease this thing,"
Fizban said, examining the axle critically.
That's all you get today, shoddy workmanship.
I'm really rather glad they didn't,
Tass said mildly, crawling forward onto the chain. About halfway across the gap, the Kender considered what it would be like to fall from this height, tumbling down and down and down, then hitting the stone floor at the bottom. He wondered what it would feel like to splatter all over the floor.
"Get a move on!"
Fizban shouted, crawling out onto the chain after the Kender. Tass crawled forward quickly to the tunnel entrance, where the puffball flame waited, then jumped off the chain onto the stone floor about 5 feet below him. The puffball flame darted in after him, and finally Fizban reached the tunnel entrance too. At the last moment he fell, but Tass caught hold of his robes and dragged the old man to safety. They were sitting on the floor, resting, when the old man's head snapped up.
"My staff," he said.
"What about it?"
Tass yawned, wondering what time it was. The old man struggled to his feet.
"Left it down below,"
he mumbled, heading for the chain.
"Wait! You can't go back!"
Tasselhoff jumped up in alarm.
"Who says?"
asked the old man petulantly, his beard bristling.
I mean... Tass stuttered. "It would be too dangerous. But I know how you feel. My hoopack's down there."
"Hmm,"
Fizban said, sitting back down disconsolately.
"Was it magic?"
Tass asked after a moment.
"I was never quite certain,"
Fizban said wistfully.
"Well,"
said Tass practically,
"maybe after we finish the adventure we can go back and get it. Now let's try to find some place to rest."
He glanced around the tunnel. It was about 7 feet from floor to ceiling. The huge chain ran along the top with numerous smaller chains attached, stretching across the tunnel floor into a vast, dark pit beyond. Tass, staring down into it, could vaguely make out the shape of gigantic boulders.
"What time do you suppose it is?"
Tass asked.
"Lunchtime," said the old man. "And we might as well rest right here. It's as safe a place as any."
He plopped back down. Pulling out a handful of quith pa, he began to chew on it noisily. The puffball flame wandered over and settled on the brim of the magician's hat. Tass sat down next to the mage and began to nibble on his own bit of dried fruit. Then he sniffed. There was suddenly a very peculiar smell, like someone burning old socks. Looking up, he sighed and tugged on the magician's robe.
Fizban, he said. "Your hat's on fire."
"Flint," Tanis said sternly. "For the last time, I feel as badly as you do about losing Tass, but we cannot go back. He's with Fizban, and knowing those two, they'll both manage to get out of whatever predicament they're in."
"If they don't bring the whole fortress down around our ears,"
Sturm muttered. The dwarf wiped his hand across his eyes, glared at Tanis, then whirled on his feet and stumped back to a corner where he hurled himself onto the floor, sulking. Tanis sat back down. He knew how Flint felt. It seemed odd. There'd been so many times he could happily have strangled the Kender, but now that he was gone, Tanis missed him. And for exactly the same reasons. There was an innate, unfailing cheerfulness about Tasselhoff that made him an invaluable companion. No danger ever frightened a Kender, and therefore Tass never gave up. He was never at a loss for something to do in an emergency. It might not always be the right thing, but at least he was ready to act. Tanis smiled sadly.
"I only hope this emergency doesn't prove to be his last," he thought.
The companions rested for an hour, eating quith pa and drinking fresh water from a deep well they discovered. Raistlin regained consciousness but could eat nothing. He sipped water, then lay limply back. Caraman broke the news to him about Fizban hesitantly, fearing his brother might take the old mage's disappearance badly. But Raistlin simply shrugged, closed his eyes, and sank into a deep sleep. After Tanis felt his strength return, he rose and walked toward Gilthanas, noting that the elf was intently studying a map. Passing Lorana, who sat alone, he smiled at her. She refused to acknowledge it. Tanis sighed. Already he regretted speaking harshly to her back in the Slamori. He had to admit that she had handled herself remarkably well under terrifying circumstances. She had done what she was told to quickly and without question. Tanis supposed he would have to apologize. But first he needed to talk to Gilthanas. "What's the plan?" he asked, sitting down on a crate. "Yes, where are we?" Sturm asked. Soon almost everyone was crowded around the map except Raistlin, who appeared to sleep, though Tanis thought he saw a slit of gold shining through the mage's supposedly closed eyelids. Gilthanas spread his map flat. "Here is the fortress of Pax Tharkas and the surrounding mine area," he said. Then he pointed. "We are in the cellars, here on the lowest level. Down this hallway, about 50 feet from here, are the rooms where the women are imprisoned. This is a guard room, across from the women, and this," he tapped the map gently, "is the lair of one of the red dragons, the one Lord Verminard called Ember. The dragon is so big, of course, that the lair extends up above ground level, communicating with Lord Verminard's chambers on the first floor, up through the gallery on the second floor, and out into the open sky." Gilthanas smiled bitterly. "On the first floor, behind Verminard's chambers, is the prison where the children are kept. The Dragon High Lord is wise. He keeps the hostages separated, knowing that the women would never consider leaving without their children, and the men would not leave without their families. The children are guarded by a second red dragon in this room. The men, about 300 of them, work in mines out in the mountain caves. There are several hundred gully dwarves working the mines as well." "You seem to know a lot about Pax Tharkas," Eben said. Gilthanas glanced up quickly. "What do you insinuate?" "I'm not insinuating anything," Eben answered. "It's just that you know a lot about this place for never having been here. And wasn't it interesting that we kept running into creatures who damn near killed us back in the Slamori?" "Eben." Tanis spoke very quietly. "We've had enough of your suspicions. I don't believe any of us is a traitor. As Raistlin said, the traitor could have betrayed any of us long before this. What's the point of coming this far?" "To bring me and the discs to Lord Verminard," Gold Moon said softly. "He knows I am here, Tanis. He and I are linked by our faith."
"That's ridiculous," Sturm snorted.
"No, it isn't," Gold Moon said. "Remember, there are two constellations missing. One was the Queen of Darkness. From what little I've been able to understand, in the discs of Mishikal, the queen was also one of the ancient gods. The gods of good are matched by the gods of evil, with the gods of neutrality striving to keep the balance. Verminard worships the Queen of Darkness as I worship Mishikal. That is what Mishikal meant when she said we were to restore the balance. The promise of good that I bring is the one thing he fears, and he is exerting all his will to find me. The longer I stay here..." Her voice died. "All the more reason to quit bickering," Tanis stated, switching his gaze to Eben. The fighter shrugged.
Enough said. I'm with you.
What is your plan, Giltinus? Tanis asked, noticing with irritation that Sturm and Caramon and Eben exchanged quick glances, three humans sticking together against the elves. He caught himself thinking.
But perhaps I'm just as bad. Believing in Giltinus because he's an elf.
Giltinus saw the exchange of glances too. For a moment he stared at them with an intense, unblinking gaze, then began to speak in a measured tone, considering his words, as if reluctant to reveal any more than was absolutely necessary.
Every evening, 10 to 12 women are allowed to leave their cells and take food to the men in the mines. Thus the High Lord lets the men see that he is keeping his side of the bargain. The women are allowed to visit the children once a day for the same reason. My warriors and I planned to disguise ourselves as women, go out to the men in the mines, tell them of the plan to free the hostages, and alert them to be ready to strike. Beyond that, we had not thought, particularly in regard to freeing the children. Our spies indicated something strange about the dragon guarding the children, but we could not determine what. Caramon started to ask, caught Tanis's eye and thought better of his question. Instead, he asked,
"When will we strike? And what about the dragon, Ember?"
"We strike tomorrow morning.